the coordinator of the 7,000-strong Indigenous Guard, whose ancestral mission is to defend the rights of the Pez, Colombia's largest Indigenous group. Unarmed, guardsmen rely only on their numbers. Last July, they rescued a kidnapped humanitarian aid worker. They dismantle cocaine labs and protect communities from displacement. Again, Alfredo.
Here, there are not just drugs and guerrillas. There are alternatives. These are examples of defense without needing to fire a shot. Through dialogue with the word, we can succeed in rescuing the kidnapped. This is the message.
The escalation of U.S. military aid in the 1990s complicated the Guard's task by intensifying Colombia's civil war. Over the years, guerrillas, rightist paramilitaries, large landowners, and government forces have killed hundreds of Pez. Even now, the government threatens to crack down on the Guard and strip the indigenous of their territorial autonomy, according to Giovanni Yule, director of the Association of Indigenous Councils.
The model being imposed on us is global, so we need to have backing from the entire world to survive as indigenous people. Alliances with the world's alternative social sectors are crucial, because right now we run the risk of being wiped out.
Yet the Pez have made inroads, reclaiming huge tracts of land, establishing self-rule on 16 reservations, and founding a university to offer their youth opportunities outside of the war. A caravan of pickups and open-sided buses turns the corner, packed with guardsmen accompanying the recently liberated Pez leaders. Mayor of Toribio, Arquímedes Bitonas, recognized by UNESCO as a master of wisdom, speaks of his two-week captivity.
The people demanded respect for the communities. Obviously, this release was only possible with a community united, organized, and strong. And that is difficult given the circumstances here in our territories.
This is Dan Malakoff reporting from Cali, Colombia.
War, Inc.
Free Speech Radio News commentator Mumia Abu-Jamal reporting from his cell on death row.
For many people, the insidious interaction between oil interests and U.S. foreign policy has spawned the popular slogan first voiced during the Gulf War, "No blood for oil." Now, over a decade later, such a slogan sounds hollow, especially as the Iraqi resistance drags on and the nation, far from its promised fortunes of a democracy, seems poised on the precipice of civil war. What many of us didn't see was the obscene growth of the private military industries that have been the very lifeblood of this war, and which has enriched these many businesses to the tune of over $100 billion. When we think of military contractors, we think of food services, laundries, clerks, and perhaps construction companies. It is that, but not that alone. Private military companies are, in fact, private armies, sworn not to uphold democracy, but to serve their companies and the company's most important objective, the bottom line. They do what armies do. They fight. Remember the hanging and mutilation of four contractors in Fallujah in April? Those guys were former U.S. Special Forces commandos who worked for Blackwater Security Consulting, the very same group that days later was engaged in a full-scale battle in Najaf, where Blackwater helicopters waged a firefight there while resupplying. As Peter W. Singer, a Brookings Institute fellow, noted recently, sometimes these assignments are described euphemistically as private security to make them sound less military. But these are not private guards who stroll at the local shopping mall. They involved personnel with military skills and weapons who carry out military functions within a war zone against military-level threats. The New York Times has called them shadow soldiers. This is not a war for oil. It is a war for Blackwater, a war for Titan, a war for DynCorp, a war for Halliburton, a war for Kellogg, Brown and Root, a war for Vinnell, a war for Northrop Grumman. It is a war for the privatization of war. It is a war for the basest and the oldest of reasons, profit. From Death Row, for Free Speech Radio News, this has been Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
Free Speech Radio News is a worker-run collective with a collective editorial process. For more information, please visit our website at www.fsrn.org. You'll also find a full archive of all our newscasts and documentaries online. In New York, I'm Deepa Fernandez.
And in hell, this is Emmanuel Goldstein, WUSB, Stony Brook time, 6 minutes ago for Off the Wall. Good evening to everybody. Sorry for the late start. I don't know why the news started so late, but everything around here is broken. Nothing's working properly. Nobody knows how to fix anything. And for those of you on the internet, let me apologize right now, okay? Because you're out there. You're out there. I spent the last 15 minutes trying to figure out what's going on with that confounded computer in the back there. And it is working now, except it's working weird. So, like, every third word is dropped, and people sound like chipmunks and things. It's either do the show or figure out how to work the computer. So let me just apologize to those internet people out there. And I'm going to have to repeat that because you probably didn't hear all of it, so the odds of you hearing it a second time will improve. Let me apologize to all you internet people out there. It's the best we can do right now. So it's either this or nothing. And you can always listen to the archive later. You can always listen to the archive later. All right. I'm sorry. It's just everything is falling down around. You know, the computer here is all crazy. The lights don't even work. I think it's a plot to just jump on my deprived mental state as it is to drive me completely insane. There's not far to go. You know, this is the home stretch. I see insanity looming ahead, and I'm heading full speed towards it. And you know what? It's kind of comforting seeing that destination ahead. But, I'd like to, you know, talk about the more serious issues that have been going on in the last couple of weeks, because they certainly have affected a lot of people, and I think they're going to affect everybody in some way. And that's kind of what I'd like to discuss, continue to discuss, and get it out of my system a little bit more. Because, boy, there's an awful lot that gets bottled up when you get imprisoned. And, whether it's just or not just, in my case, I know it was completely unjust, it still is a very messed up way to survive, or try to survive. And I'd like to hear from people. I'd like to especially have conversations with anybody who was there, and anybody who might have experienced something like this in the past, or just people who might have questions. Hell, I'll even talk to people who think it was the right thing to do. And by right thing to do, I mean locking up something like 1,821 people for periods ranging from 24 hours to over 50 hours in places like an old bus depot on the west side of Manhattan to the Tombs, which is... it's something that Kafka missed. He would have written a series of novels about this place, let me tell you. Really gruesome, horrible. I just put online today, in fact, a whole bunch of recollections of the entire ordeal. My ordeal started on August 31st. That was in the middle of the Republican convention. I was in Union Square Park, and my big mistake was hearing a marching band and following where they went. And even though I was not part of the procession, the mere fact that I was standing between the intersection of 16th Street and Union Square East and the intersection of 16th Street and what's that other the names escape me. My memory's been going nuts lately. Irving Place, thank you. Irving Place. Between those two places, standing there, that was enough. That was enough to get charged with disorderly conduct. And there are so many stories. If you search around on the internet, if you just wander around, you will find so many other stories of people that have gone through the same or very similar circumstances. And it's scary. It really is scary to hear all these people saying the same thing. I was just standing on the sidewalk. I was trying to get someplace. I had no part in any of this. It didn't matter. It didn't matter. I was swept up and taken away. I lost 2 or 3 days of my life. And in my case, yeah, I feel like I've lost a lot more than that because just the recuperation. And, you know, it's like I said in the written piece, which I didn't mention where it was. It's on our main website, www.2600.com. There's a whole RNC section now. But, you know, I'm embarrassed, ashamed, all that kind of thing. Just thinking of all the true horrors that have been going on in the world since the world began. Things that are happening right now, things that will happen tomorrow, different parts of the world, even in this part of the world, that make this pale in comparison. Yeah, I got locked away for what, 33, 34 hours with 1,000 other people. Was never by myself. Was never tortured in the true sense of the word. So, you know, who am I to complain about this? You still live in the greatest country on earth. You still have your freedom. You still have all these things. Well, come on already. It drives little nails into your head when you see these things happening around you and you're told you've got to accept this. It's the sacrifice you must make. And then when you get out, there's a piece of you that doesn't quite get out. It's very hard to explain this, and that's why I want to talk to anybody else who is involved in this. And if you can hear us, either through the signal that we have, which gets to most of Suffolk County, or the internet, which is kind of broken right now, but hopefully will be at least good enough to get the phone number out, 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. I'd certainly like to talk to people who have gone through similar or identical experiences during the RNC, or, you know, even other things as well, because I think we can all learn and draw strength from what's going on out there. I'll tell you, you know, I go into more detail online with this, but just getting out of that place was a shock in itself. You're in there for more than a day and a half straight, and this is after having a full day beforehand. No food to speak of, no facilities that anybody would want to go near, and just an overall gloom and foreboding. And not knowing what's going to happen next, not knowing why you're there. I mean, it's just, I mentioned Kafka before. This is Kafka. This is living Kafka. Read the trial, you know? It's, you don't know what you're being charged with. You don't know why you're a suspect. You don't know what's going to become of you. And we still don't. We still don't. And I speak of the country at large because we're all affected by this. What happened in New York City at the beginning of this month and the end of last month was unprecedented. Unprecedented, where police can simply sweep down a street and take everybody. Take everybody in. Now, you know, of course, there are the people that that exaggerated to the degree of absurdity, saying it's a concentration camp, saying it's Guantanamo Bay. And, you know, I like the Guantanamo on the Hudson moniker that has been attached to this. But I don't for a second say that it's the same thing. Literally. But it is the same idea. The same idea of grabbing people, detaining them, putting them in some place that wasn't meant for them to be, and sorting it all out later, and probably just dropping the whole thing in the end. Okay, add torture, add horrible things that go on in the real Guantanamo Bay, and yeah, you get that situation. Okay, that's the advanced class. But what we have here is definitely a start. And things progress. Things progress. They start out at a certain point, and they move on to other points. Look at where we are now. Now go back 10 years ago. You see the progression? You see how we were way far away in a different place than we are now. We didn't detain people without charge 10 years ago. We didn't invade countries without reason 10 years ago. There's all these things now that we're just sort of taking for granted. And we'll do it again in the future. And we'll expand upon it a little bit more. So you'll have these detention centers in every city, perhaps. And you'll sweep off whatever street you feel like sweeping off and sort it all out later. That's how it all works. That's a progression. So yeah, you know, I have a lot of problems with people who exaggerate what's going on. So did everybody in there. We were on a bus heading over to the place. And there's a guy there saying, you know, this is torture. This is the same as the Holocaust. And, you know, people on the bus were just like, shut up already. You don't know what you're talking about. Well, they weren't quite that hostile. But, you know, this is not the same. Clearly, this is not the same. It's a big injustice. It's a horrible thing that's happening to us. But get a grip on you know, perspective here. And that's, you know, I wish the people that categorize everybody the same way, everybody who was detained, everybody who was taken as the same mindless protester type, you know, that only eats soy and, you know, doesn't wear animal fur and is against everything the U.S. is for and whatever, you know, all these stupid categorizations that they make in a disparaging tone. Well, it's not quite true. It's not quite true. And I learned that over my many, many, many hours in there with them. This is a very diverse group of people. People argued over everything. Not in a bad way. Just, you know, kind of debated, discussed. All different kinds of viewpoints. And of course, you know, that's to be expected because you had people from who weren't even a part of any demonstration. But I'm talking specifically among the demonstrators. There was such a divergence of opinion. And I think that's what a lot of people miss. A lot of people just don't get that. They think it's one monolithic mass of people and they all think the same way. No, that's not the way it is. So if there's anything positive I got from being locked away with them for that amount of time, it's that. I kind of knew that to start with, though. I didn't really need the lesson. But I gotta tell you, it's sobering. I see there's a phone call coming in. Let's see. Is there somebody there?
Hello?
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Emmanuel.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Suffolk County, New York.
So you're listening to us on the radio, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, not listening to us.
I just walked out. Okay.
All right.
All right.
What's on
Emmanuel,
your mind? Yeah, go
first
ahead.
First of all, I want to say that what happened, obviously, it's an extreme miscarriage of justice. It's an abuse of power. Anyone who can't see that clearly isn't, you know, up on the Constitution.
Right.
But I think the one thing I'm calling you to point out, really, is that the one thing that you'd be guilty of,
uh-huh,
at least from the perspective of the New York City police, is that you didn't have the New York City police issued press pass.
Ah, yes, you're absolutely right. I did not have the New York City police press pass. You know why I didn't have the New York City police press pass? Because nobody can get that. The only people that can get that are full-time paid reporters who have a demonstrated need to have to get behind New York City police lines. I don't have that need. The line formed around me. I was in a place, and all of a sudden, I was in the middle of a circle of police. I don't need to, like, see dead bodies that are behind police lines or investigate crime scenes or things like that.
No, I agree. And in fact, from the stories that I heard from friends of mine who are, in fact, with the quote-unquote, you know, mainstream press or whatever it took to get said pass, They were just as rude and incalcitrant towards them as well.
Really?
The tactics that they were using, using the police on their bicycles, using them as makeshift barricades, and then shoving people back so that they would stand in such a place. The one person to whom I'm referring to, the photographer, and so they were using it sort of as a barricade to block the shots so that they couldn't get the media graphic sort of shots that, of, you know, the things that were going on when they're wrestling people to the ground for standing up for their own rights. I mean, how dare you stand up for your own, you know, constitutional rights?
And that's the thing. You know, the people that were there, at least on 16th Street where I was, I heard this in other places as well, they did everything they were asked. They get on the sidewalk, people got on the sidewalk, sit down, people sat down, stand up, people stand up, touch your toes and touch your nose. Whatever it was the police were asking, the people were doing. And if you look around, if you see all the different accounts on indie media and various other places all around the net, you'll see that people were complying completely with police instructions. It didn't matter. It didn't make any difference.
No, I mean, really, it's almost a form of entrapment, really, because what they were doing is the disorderly conduct. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I can't go into exactly what it infers to, but failure to obey police instructions is apparently a crime. And so if you fail to play Simon Says properly with the police, then guess what? You've committed a crime. You know, and if you don't react fast enough or the way exactly that they intended and they couldn't communicate it properly, and a lot of games are being played here. Clearly the intent of the police force in mass was to detain anyone who had a form of dissent, a dissenting opinion of the Republican National Convention until such time as George W. Bush left New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And the timing of it, it is very specific. You know, you were talking about some people were in jail for some 50 hours. I mean, I heard a story on the other station, you know, BAI, where they were talking about minors who were being held for, you know, over 48 hours.
Yeah.
And
imagine that, a 15-year-old kid not being able to call his parents for 2 days.
And then never charged with an actual crime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's clearly a violation of the person's rights.
A number of people were released without any charge whatsoever, and yeah, you have to wonder, how do you even prove you were ever put into custody?
Well, it's clearly the message that they were sending was, and the whole purpose of arresting everyone on a given block, whether you were involved or not, was if you're anywhere near the protests are bad, so you have to get away because you're going to be arrested. So the concept,
mm-hmm.
the entire thing was calculated
yes.
to drive people away.
Precisely, and that's the effect it's going to have. I think, you know, a number of people didn't go to Central Park on the Sunday after the march because they thought, well, maybe there'll be trouble, even though they had every right to go to Central Park, and a number of people did. The same way, and when a protest is announced in the future, people are going to say, well, if I go to the protest, what could happen? You know, the police could rope me off and take me away, and my name will be printed in the paper. It'll be all embarrassing, so I guess I just won't go.
I mean, if you had a game of ultimate frisbee in Central Park that involved more than 15 people, those people were going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter whether you were protesting or not. Apparently, assembly, which last I heard was, you know, a right given in the Constitution.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the thing in the park went off fine. There were no problems in the park. But what the police did was simply point out certain areas and say, you know, we'd like to just kind of contain this area. And rather than keep the people from going anywhere else, let's just take them and put them someplace else. That way they're out of the equation.
And, of course, this is the same tactic that's being used in the quote-unquote free speech zones,
mm-hmm.
where they say, okay, you're allowed to have free speech, but only in an area where it was just nowhere near the event that's going on because we don't want the cameras to catch the fact that we're unpopular. And if you see a very few of the shots, I mean, fortunately, you know, some photographers were able to get access to rooftops to try to get a picture of the scale of the events of the protest that was going on. But if you look, a lot of the published photography and whatnot that was in the numerous newspapers, magazines, etc., mm-hmm. was from a very close scale because this is all that the photographers could get.
Uh-huh.
You know, in many ways, they were being blocked off. Now, one could think from an aspect of security, well, sure, if the president's in town, maybe having anybody just walk up on a rooftop, you know, would be a bad thing because, you know, maybe they might do something bad, you know, involving, you know, something terrible, you know,
mm-hmm.
and maybe that's a good thing to some extent, but at the same time, you know, the ability to broadcast a message of how unhappy people were. And I think it was also extremely calculated that I mean, and maybe I'm going out on a limb here, but I think it was calculated that the Republican National Convention was held in a city which they could hold up as a symbol to the rest of the country, saying, oh, look at the terrible things that happened here. And we're going to, you know, we're going to rally here because, you know, this is going to be a message to the rest of the country. Meanwhile, it's a city that doesn't vote for that candidate in the first place.
Yeah, and I can tell you, they're not going to vote for him this time, and I don't think there's ever going to be a Republican convention in New York City again. And I said on the other radio show, and I hope this is true, this will also spell the end of that Olympic dream, because the kind of security, the massive police presence in the city is something that people did not like. They did not appreciate that. When it ended on Thursday, I also described this, Union Square Park, Thursday night, all of a sudden, it just the mood in the city changed because the police started to just sort of disappear and back off, and the helicopters went away, and you realized that Bush had left town. And it was like an invading army had just sort of left.
And that's, of course, coincidentally when it started to be released.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. The relief, I just cannot describe it. And that, of course, I was still a zombie at that point. You know, I'd recovered a little bit, 12 hours of sleep, but I was still, you know, stumbling around, scared to death of cops and helicopters.
You know, I don't want to eat up your whole program, obviously. I want you to be able to take other calls. But
yes.
The other thing is, the holding areas that were specifically designed for extra capacity, don't think that that wasn't planned also, because the normal system is replete with video cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So that if there were infringements, against people's rights, abuse of power, in a normal processing center, there would be a record of it, where a judge could pull a tape from a security camera and say, "See, this is what's happening. These people are acting up, you know, this person was out of line." There's no cameras in those facilities. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. You were there. I wasn't.
Yeah, my camera was there, though, and I was able to capture a little bit, but nothing that would...
facilities.
Yeah, nothing that a security camera would capture continuously. But there are so many accounts, so many people, and they all have a common thread to them, and that has to count for something.
I think what they're counting on is the fact that it's blown over and people are going to forget and not care anymore, and I think it's really important that you're continuing to go over this. So, thank you for taking my call. I'm a long-time listener.
All right, thanks for your support.
You've got it 100%. And I just want to point out that I am a Republican, like Jim on the other program. And I think that... This is a travesty.
Yeah, it doesn't matter at all. I've talked to a lot of people on both sides of this supposed political fence, and that's not the issue at all.
I don't want it to be said that, you know, Republicans can't see the truth for what it is. I'm outraged and shocked by what's going on, and I think it's a travesty. Thanks
for speaking out. And again, our phone number is 631-632-9872. Let's check in on that internet stream, see how bad it sounds.
Republicans can't see truth for what it is. I'm enraged and shocked at what's going on, and that's a travesty.
Thanks for speaking out. And again, our phone number is 631-632-9872. Boy, that's almost impossible to deal with, isn't it? Well, I don't think we're going to be getting internet calls today. I'm sorry, internet people, if you're listening to that. Boy, you have a lot of patience. So I guess we're stuck with localists. And I don't mean that in a bad way, you know, but I'd like to reach out to other people in the rest of the world as well, but unfortunately our 1950s equipment here doesn't seem to be capable of it. 631-632-9872, 631-632-9872, in case you heard that on the internet. I'll say it twice. I'd like to play a couple of things for you. I obviously have been playing a lot of material. Last week was all material, and some of Off the Hook also was some material too. But this is some things I didn't get to play, mainly because they're not from August 31st. In fact, these are from, let's see what we got here. This is from the actual march on August 29th, on Sunday, where 500,000 people marched through the streets. And this is one of those shame chants right by Madison Square Garden.
Right outside the garden now, in the midst of it all. And the people go all the way back to Union Square, perhaps even beyond by now. The police are barricading off Madison Square Garden completely.
Go, 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 go
I don't think you need me to translate what they're saying. For some reason, I don't understand this at all.
For some reason, Fox News is being broadcast on a big screen right outside Macy's, and the crowd is not really reacting well to this. Middle fingers and boos and hisses.
It's like a giant telescreen at Macy's there. Fox indeed. And there was a band in this march as well. And this band wasn't really harassed like the other one on August 31st. This was August 29th, walking through the streets of Manhattan with 500,000 other people. And, you know, for me, I kind of regret this, that I guess that march, which was really magic, it really was incredible seeing all those people turning out, that's always going to be overshadowed by what happened 2 days later. And 3 days later. And 4 days later. That's one of my friends saying he can't stand the guy with the whistle, and I kind of agree. And later on, of course, a lot of people went over to the park. Nothing like 500,000 people, nothing like 250,000 people like was originally planned, more like a couple of thousand. But it was fun. It was, you know, a nice, mellow hangout, and some people chanting, some people just clapping along with various things and chanting, and various other fun activities. And it almost seemed at the time like there wasn't going to be any trouble at all for the entire period. Maybe people would be allowed to express their opinions. Maybe they would be allowed to demonstrate and speak out. Whatever. It wasn't to be. Our email address, otw@2600.com, and we get lots of email all the time, so I'm going to read a couple of pieces. Let me also give out the phone number, 631-632-9872-631-632-WUSB. I'm checking a lower bit rate on the internet stream. Let's see how bad it is.
Can't stand the guy with the whistle. Kind of.
That's even worse.
Later on, of course, a lot of people went over to the park.
You know, if anyone out there knows computers or radio equipment, please, you know, we'll pay for you to live here. We'll buy you cars and houses and things like that. We're desperate. Desperate. We'll raise the money somehow. We'll do it. Hate to see this place fall apart. All right. Sorry about your incident. I wrote back in January about how easy it is to get arrested. And why am I still hearing myself? I turned that off. Okay, it's bleeding somehow. All right. I wrote back in January about how easy it is to get arrested. I just asked what was the probable cause for search, and since they had no answer, I was arrested. Seems all you were doing is reporting. Welcome to the club. I am still going to court, and it's September now. In perfect Orwellian style, the prosecutor said the charges would be dropped if I signed a paper that stated there was probable cause. I refused to sign because I would be agreeing to something I know was not true. Keep reporting the facts. Thanks very much for the support and the encouragement. And, yeah, you know, I think that's an important thing, that people not back down and agree to something that is not true, whether that's a traffic ticket or something a bit more serious. And go ahead, you're on the air. Well, okay, I guess I understand that sentiment. But the challenge is still out there. I made this challenge on the other radio program. If you're a cop, I want to hear from you. Because I want to hear the rationale behind this kind of thing. You know, I'd like to hear an explanation. I'd like to hear your excuse. How can you lock people away for 3 days? Innocent people who weren't doing anything in the name of security. How can you do this? And do you understand in any way the effects that this kind of a thing can have on somebody that could last the rest of their lives? You know, it might seem a fairly trivial thing if you lock lots of people up and you see people go away for years at a time. But for someone who is not mentally prepared for something like that, it can be traumatic to the stage where you never quite recover. People who are claustrophobic, people who are, you know, nervous as it is, or just unhealthy in various ways. God, I saw so many people who were in pain, really bad pain from all kinds of ailments, who were ignored constantly, crying out for painkillers, aspirin, anything. Police just walking by, guards just walking by. I can't tell the difference. They wear the same uniforms. And one will say, oh, they're bad because they're guards. And the other will say they're bad because they're cops. You know what? You're all the same to me right now. You're all the same. And I want to get that out of my head. I really do. Because in the past, I've had all kinds of good encounters with cops. But right now, you know, I just saw hundreds and hundreds of them doing the same thing. Not being able to change anything. Not being able to lift a finger or speak out as individuals. All part of this big machine. And yeah, there were some who were nice. There were some who actually loosened your handcuffs instead of tightening them when you asked. And yeah, there were the bastards who would tighten your handcuffs when you asked. For them to loosen them, that is. But, you know, that's about the extent of it. A smile, a nod, you know, that kind of a thing. You couldn't make the conditions any better. You couldn't actually supply anybody with edible food. Or speed up the process, or even tell us what the hell was going to happen next. My God, the number of times we were told, you know, that you almost finished, this is it. The number of times, ever since before we got on the first bus to go to Pier 57. Oh, you'll be out by, you know, by nighttime. Don't worry, just cooperate. Just don't cause any problems. It'll go fast. At Pier 57, well, you know, we just have to go through your bags. We just have to process. A lot of people here, you know, give us a little bit of time. We'll sort it out. You'll be out soon. The tombs. Next cell, the last cell, we promise. I was transferred 12 different times. 12 different times moved to a new cell. And after a while, that really messes with your head because it all seems like you're just moving down a hallway from one cell to another, and it never ends. And it's never going to end. And God forbid you run into trouble again in any way, you know, whether it be by having your front tire over the stop line, or, you know, jaywalking, or whatever. even being falsely accused of something, or even if you do commit a crime of some sort, just thinking of what lies ahead, it makes people really, really scared. And it wasn't until I talked to a number of others who had been through this. I thought I was just kind of, you know, messed up in the head. But I talked to other people who were experiencing physically and mentally almost the precise same things I was going through. I'll tell you, that in itself was a real revelation. It was a real surprise. And it felt very good to know that I wasn't alone, that other people were also feeling this. All right, let's read another letter. And again, our phone number for those people who want to stick on the line is 631-632-9872. Again, apologies to those of you listening to this on the archive because you couldn't listen to it live. Don't know what to tell you. Dear Emmanuel, for me, it was a long time since I sat transfixed in dismay while listening to what happened to you when you were trying to cover the protest march last week, 2 weeks ago now. I just could not believe it. Actually, yeah, it was 2 weeks ago to the day. Right now, at this point, 2 weeks ago, I was sitting on the sidewalk on 16th Street. And good evening, you're on the air.
Hi, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
Pretty good. Listen, you were asking for a police officer. Well, I'm a police officer.
Oh, great. Well, first of all, I want to thank you for calling.
All right, but just one thing. I'm not a New York City police officer, and I can't speak for what happened in the streets there.
Okay.
I just want to just let you know that people do have the opportunity to challenge anything in a court of law. That's what it's for. So.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no question about that. There are going to be massive challenges, but it doesn't take away what happened and the horrors that that people are faced with who have never been through this kind of thing before.
I agree with you. I tend to lean on the left side of the fence, so I'm not really calling from the other side.
But in whatever jurisdiction you serve in, are you, a matter of course, given orders to round people up when it's obvious that they're not a part of something or that they haven't done anything illegal?
No, I have not been given any orders to that effect, no. Mm-hmm.
What would you do if you were given orders like that?
Professional judgment in some certain situations. But,
I mean, if you were told as a police officer, go to this block and arrest everybody on that block, what would go through your head?
Well, a lot of things would go through my head, but, you know, that puts me in a very bad position because, you know, you're being ordered to do something, and it is a quasi-military style organization that you work for.
Mm-hmm.
Having that in mind, you know, if you fail to obey a lawful order from your commanding officer, you could put yourself in a problem. However, if you arrest someone where the act is just, you know, the order is so egregious, I don't think you would, you know, personally come under any kind of attack for it. I think people higher up would be held responsible for something like that.
So where would you draw the line?
That's an interesting question. Again, I told you, I kind of lean on the other side of the fence. So I can't actually say unless I'm actually put in that position.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know what I would do unless I was put in that position.
Yeah. Well, imagine for a moment, if it's not too horrible a scenario, that you were a New York City police officer and you were on scene at that particular time. Do you think that, I'm just trying to understand the mindset of the people who were there. What could you do? Do you even have any power to change anything? Would you just go along with it? Would you just follow the orders and hope that, you know, justice was served in the end?
Well, yeah, I actually would probably end up doing that, yes. Mm-hmm. Because, again, I have to, you know, go by what my commanding officers tell me. Whether it's right or wrong, unless it's something, like I said, so egregious that, you know, you have to say, no, I can't do this. But, mm-hmm. You know, what were the charges? I don't even know what you were charged with.
I was charged with disorderly conduct. Other people were charged with that and parading without a permit. I don't know what determined which one you were charged with, since they didn't really single anybody out. They just gathered everybody together. But in my case, I was simply on the sidewalk, and I was filming and I was recording and all that kind of thing. So, you know, you have 1,800 people that have pretty much faced the same thing, and it's, I think it turns into a real scandal. It turns into something that the city's going to look back on and not look back on fondly.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You know, I'm sure there was many officers, you know, who actually were thinking the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there any recourse? Is there anything they can do after the fact? Any way they can speak out without facing some kind of discipline for speaking their minds?
I don't know. As far as that department goes, I don't know what kind of internal workings they have that could handle something like that.
Well, how about in your department? If something unjust happened that the police were a part of and you felt strongly about it, would you have any way of expressing that?
Oh, absolutely, I would. But I'm sure there's going to be repercussions for it in many ways.
So if you did speak out, you'd pay the price for it?
Yeah, I would think so, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's with every department. You know, it's, in other words, go with the flow and keep your personal opinions to yourself. You know, keep them outside of work.
Do you think there's anything we can ask police officers who are there and witnessing all of this that they can do to help with this kind of situation? Or do you think it's just a lost cause and there's nothing they can possibly do to help?
That's difficult to say because disorderly conduct is kind of like a coverall. I mean, you can almost charge anybody with disorderly conduct, failing to obey a lawful order, stuff like that. And that sounds like what happened with you.
Yeah, except there were no orders. They just basically roped everybody in and that was it. There was no order to disperse.
Yeah, well.
You've never seen anything like this before, have you?
No. I have never experienced anything like that, no. I mean, just very small groups, but nothing on that scale.
Yeah. All right, listen, I want to thank you for calling, and hopefully more police officers will call in and try to explain.
On the sides of the opinion, I wish they would call because, like I said, I tend to lean towards the left side of the fence.
Mm-hmm. Okay? You know, I think it's more a justice-injustice type of a thing, more than a left-right thing, because a lot of people on the right see the horror in this as well.
Well, that's a good thing, then, because there is a lot of... I see a lot that's wrong that's going on today, you know, as far as civil rights and whatnot. But it's got to be a massive movement. It can't be just individuals, if you know what I mean.
Well, you need a lot of people to change anything, but I think the individual is the key. And I think the more individuals who stand up and speak their minds, the more other individuals will do the same thing.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. It's who wants to be the sort of the first person or the sacrificial lamb kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing, I think the point is you can make a difference. You as an individual can make a difference. Especially,
absolutely.
I mean,
if enough people do it, you're right. I'm not going to disagree with you.
Right. You're making a difference right now by speaking as a police officer, and maybe people are hearing you and seeing that, wow, you know, this person sounds like a rational person. Maybe, you know, maybe there's a way to communicate. Maybe there's a way to prevent this kind of thing from happening again. Who knows? We have to explore that.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
All right. Hey, thanks for calling.
Okay.
And you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. Just listening to your show, and I'm kind of surprised that anyone would find that going to jail is supposed to be a good thing.
Well, I don't think it's supposed to be a good thing, and I wasn't in I wasn't the one. It wasn't my idea to do that in the first place. You know?
Why didn't this happen at the Democratic Party?
First of all, there weren't nearly as many people in the city of Boston to start with. There weren't nearly as many protests. There weren't nearly as many people doing various things that happened at the RNC.
Is something Republicans would do?
Well, you know, there's a lot of theory as to where the orders came from to sweep people up off the streets, whether it came from, the White House, Republican National Committee, the police department, the mayor. You know, in the end, it doesn't really matter. The fact is it happened. It was unfair, and something needs to be done about it.
Because you know that people are blocking traffic, and the police are there to control the crowd.
You know who was blocking the traffic? The police were blocking the traffic. they closed off. They closed off the street that I was on. I was on the sidewalk of 16th Street. They closed that street off for hours. Now, this is because maybe 100, 200 people marched down that street with a band. That took all of 20 seconds. And then the street was open again. But they sealed off the street and closed it completely off and did all kinds of other traffic nightmares throughout
the
city.
For the potential of what could happen.
Well, what is this, pre-crime? Are we going to start arresting people because of what they could do in the future? I mean, you know, let's wait for some kind of a crime to be committed before we cart everybody away. Don't you think that's fair?
My signal here. You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. You're on a cell phone?
Yeah, on a cell phone.
The technology of the 2000s.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I just find it funny that you go there with the intention of speaking your mind, which is...
Now, hold on a second. Hold on. I went there with the intention of covering this for this radio show, for the other radio show, and for indie media, filming with my video camera. And it was obvious that that's what I was doing. I was on the sidewalk. I wasn't part of any march. It didn't seem to matter to these guys.
What happened?
Sorry?
You got swept up in what took place.
I got swept up and held for about 33, 34 hours in the system.
Right, but those around you, I'm sure, were, you know, being confrontatious with the police.
No, actually, they weren't. Even the people who were part of the marching band and people who were engaging civil disobedience, they weren't confrontational. There were a handful of people whose intent was to get arrested. Fine, you know, but...
And, Chris Matthews himself was trying to do a show, mm-hmm. Side of the Garden, and he was attacked, almost attacked a few times.
I heard somebody ran onto the set. You know, these things aren't that major a deal. You got to deal with them. But what the police did in this case was completely paralyze the city and go way overboard, sweeping up entire blocks of people. I don't see how that can be justified in any context.
Well, I was down there myself because I work in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
I did see a lot of people that, you know, were there for any intent just to disrupt the Republican Party.
I didn't like the people who were going around making the delegates' lives miserable. I think that's kind of immature.
But so you don't see that on the reverse. You don't see that coming from the Republicans at the Democratic convention.
Well, you know, I think maybe if the Democrats were in power, you might. I don't know. Maybe you're right.
To do something, they should have had a big rally at the Democratic in Boston and march in the streets and everything. Mm-hmm. Have more purpose to show you support the Democratic Party.
Yeah, well, you know, the point is the Democrats aren't in power. The Democrats haven't been the ones involved in all the things that have been going on in the Bush administration. I mean, you know, obviously they haven't been opposing it as much as I think they should have, but that's another issue. Everybody knew the Republican convention was going to bring a lot of protesters, a lot of demonstrations. And I think, you know, it would have been fine. It would have been fine if it just was allowed to take place. You stop people from any kind of physical abuse. You stop people from any kind of trespassing. You stop people from, you know, disrupting the actual convention itself. But people just expressing themselves, okay, so somebody marches down a street, you know, big deal. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah, but why couldn't they march in Boston?
I don't know. I mean, I'd be happy if they were marching in Boston.
That wasn't their point. Their point was to disrupt the Republican Party's convention.
Well, and one of the other reasons they didn't march in Boston was because the city was sealed off. You know, they had free speech zones, which nobody wanted to go in, and it was very difficult.
At least New York's a little more liberal.
Well, it's also a lot bigger, you know, a lot harder to contain. And, yeah, you know, I don't know whose idea – well, I know whose idea it was to bring the Republicans to New York. I think it was a bad idea. I think this caused a lot of hostility, inconvenience, and injustice.
Who was that, Bloomberg?
Yeah, Bloomberg.
Yeah, or Pataki, maybe.
Well, he didn't help, that's for sure. Anyway, listen, thanks for your call.
All right, thank you.
All right, take care. I'd love to talk about this for hours and hours to come. It's important. It's important to have dialogue, to exchange ideas and opinions. And for those of you listening on the internet after this show gets archived and hitting your head with your fist saying, boy, I wanted to call in, you can call in tomorrow when we have a decent stream on the other radio station and also a bigger signal. So that's on at 7 o'clock Wednesday night. So sorry about that. Maybe next week we'll have another opportunity if things aren't broken to talk. Let me finish with this letter, and then we'll get out of here. Anyway, I just couldn't believe what happened. How could such callous disregard for individual rights happen here in the USA? I was shocked, to say the least. Granted, I may have only heard an audio record of what happened when you and many others were arrested, but it was enough to make me sick. What I heard made it very clear that the actions of the NYPD were far from warranted. I could hear the demonstration being peaceful. Perhaps even celebrative, as if everyone was just on parade having fun. That's what I saw. In fact, you can see it too if you go to our website. You can watch the video. You can see the pictures and hear the audio. www.2600.com, and there's an RNC section there now. At least until when the police pounced. Even then, people remain peaceful. I agree with you that the rights of persons, including yourself, were trampled upon. I could hear from the audio that the demonstration was nonviolent, and as far as I'm concerned, should not have been interfered with at all. I don't care what a city official might say about permits. There's this little thing called the First Amendment that enables both free speech and the right to assembly, and that is supposed to override any stupid permit. The people were peacefully stating their concerns, and they had every right to do just that. I continued listening further. I hear police officers refusing to recognize even press credentials. Well, you got to have their press credentials. And, you know, if you're from out of town, good luck getting a press credential for a different police department. The police seem to just want their pound of flesh. and this got me spooked. Did these guys really refuse to recognize you as a member of the media? Yes. Absolutely. So what if you were not working for ABC, NBC, or even CNN? You were press. You had a right to report. Again, the First Amendment got stomped on. Now I'm getting woozy. And near the end of last week's broadcast of Off the Wall, I listened to a woman who was being ignored by the cops when she tried to get her cuffs loosened. She repeatedly called to the police to loosen the cuffs because the circulation in her hands was cut off while the police just simply ignored her. And yes, I saw that, and you heard it on last week's show. And by this time, I had had enough. It had already gone too far. I have a great deal of sympathy for you and that unknown woman who was made to suffer just because she simply expressed her views. Now I will express mine. A lot of us weren't even expressing views, too, just so people know. Not that there's anything wrong with expressing views. Nobody should have had to go through that. Yes, police brutality has happened before. Perhaps it is needed at times, but in this case, I do not think so. Just by listening to the recording, it is clear the NYPD could have handled this better. Nothing I heard would have told me otherwise. Such abuse is supposed to happen only in other countries, not the USA. How can it be happening here? It's hard to believe. But yet, here it is. Have we gone so far that government agencies like the New York Police Department can just stomp on individual rights just because someone higher up ordered it? Are we finally starting to see the society George Orwell envisioned in 1984? I shudder to think. Signed, Christopher of Seattle. Christopher, only time will tell. We're out of time, by the way, and we'll have to settle these issues later. Again, check out the website, www.2600.com. Check out the RNC material that's been posted there today. And we'll be keeping people updated on what happens as the first hearings begin. There's a hearing tomorrow in New York City Council. I'll be having a hearing at 10 a.m. at City Hall to discuss some of what happened and address these issues. And, of course, the first hearings will be starting in a couple of weeks for the people who were charged. Mine is on October 1st. I'll be giving you more details on that. And, you know, when you feel like you've been lied to and cheated and the victim of all kinds of injustice, I think expressing it through music is one of the healthier things you can do. And maybe this wasn't the original intent of this song, but boy, it sure works now. Have a good night. I'm looking through you. Where did you go? I thought I knew you. What did I know? You don't look different, but you have changed. I'm looking through you. You're not the same. Your lips are moving. I cannot hear. Your voice is soothing, but the words aren't clear. You don't sound different. I've learned the game. I'm looking through you. You're not the same. Why, tell me, why did you not treat me right? Love has a nasty habit of disappearing overnight. You're thinking of me the same old way. You were above me, but not today. The only difference is you're down there. I'm looking through you, and you're nowhere. Why, tell me, why did you not treat me right?
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into. We'll be right back.